right? What do you want to do tonight?
The same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to take over the world.
Yeah, Metaball Football's on the air!
Kalapuya wins it like a titan! He's brilliant, the captain! Rises like a colossus! Above and hammers this one down with his beautiful curly head!
So if you're looking for the latest on the greatest sport in the world, as well as some hot opinion, interviews, entertainment, all that other good stuff, you come to the right place. Mad About Football.
Listen to my puppy show and don't miss a part. No eating, no drinking, and no peeing their pants.
Piqué, Piqué para Xavi, quedan dos, banda derecha buscando a Messi, vamos Messi, no es Alves, la pone Alves, al punto de penalti, gol, no llega, segundo para todos, ahí, es que se la come, vamos Messi, vamos Messi, en la frontal y entra,
Es igual. Tenía que ser Iniesta, se lo merecía. Es la justicia del fútbol. ¡Qué grande!
Vamos 48, solo queda uno. El que va a marcar Iniesta, por una ciudad, por un país, por todo el mundo, culé.
Y'all, welcome to Mad About Football, man, the best podcast about soccer here on the internet. And of course, we got a great show for y'all. I mean, an emotional, exciting couple of games with the Champions League, and especially today, Barcelona-Chelsea. I'm George Metellus. Alongside me is my partner in crime, Il Capo Canonieri, Mr. Juan Arango. What's going on, Chief?
Hey, what's up, everybody? Gary, it's an understatement to say that it was emotional. I mean, that's the understatement of the year, to see in such a game such as Barca-Chelsea today. It was just incredible to see how that wrapped up and to see probably what everybody wanted to see as far as the football world is concerned.
And, of course, we have El Pibe de Oro, Mike Lopez, unfortunately couldn't be with us today. But, you know, I'm sure he's doing his thing. And I know he's got something to say, so we'll definitely holler at him soon. But, you know, I mean, Juan, you said it, man. It was unbelievable. And those of us who really are tired of the English fans talking trash, thinking they have the best league, we finally got a little bit of peace. A little bit. Not too much, because Manchester United's in the final. But we got a little bit of peace for about a couple of days, because Barcelona beat Chelsea. The anti-football failed.
Yeah, I think those are fighting words or gloating words, but in a way, I mean, that's what pretty much everybody in the media outside of England has been saying, that the anti-football has been defeated. You know what I found so hypocritical about the English press regarding this football or anti-football issue, which is a little bit on the ridiculous side, is that when Chelsea put 10 players behind the ball, that was a tactical, tactfully brilliant decision on behalf of Gus Hiddink. But let's go back 3 years when Italy was winning the World Cup with a similar style, a very defensive, you know, Catenaccio type of style. All of a sudden, oh, you know, that is the anti-football.
Right.
I mean, you heard it, you know, in all the English media. Oh, my God, you know, the anti-football, Italy's the anti-football, anti-football, this, anti-football, that. But, like I said, Chelsea comes in and does this, and it's tactically brilliant.
Right.
So, I mean, well, they're talking out both sides of their mouth. So.
Exactly. And the thing is, let's be real here. England has never been known for being traditionally a team that plays attractive football anyway. You know, I mean, let's be real here. As a whole, in a country, England is not known for being a tactically, you know, I mean, not tactically, I mean, not, I shouldn't say tactically, but playing attacking, attractive football. English football is not, you know, known for that. So for them to complain about one style and then do the same style, you know, is, yeah, like you said, they're talking out of their, of both out, both sides of their mouth in that respect. But when we come to the game here, when you watch the game, you talk about the game, it's pretty obvious that Chelsea was afraid of Barcelona. Well, would you agree with that? That Chelsea was scared of, you know, Eto'o, Messi, and in the first leg, Henry? I would say that's why they lost.
Well, to a certain degree, I think they were. But when you really start to think about it, I guess it was a case that the Gus Hiddink just was very conservative. I mean, you know, Chelsea and Barcelona faced off, you know, quite a few times. So I don't think it's a whole concept of being scared of each other necessarily.
Yeah, but the last couple times that Barcelona and Chelsea faced off, Barcelona wasn't scoring 100 goals in the league. You know, they didn't have three, you know, 20 goal scorers, and then a guy like, in, you know, in Xavi and Iniesta being the forces that they were now. You know, back when the last couple times they played them in previous Champions League games, offensively, Barcelona wasn't as powerful as they are this year. So maybe that's kind of the cost or strategy change there. What do you think?
Maybe, yeah. Well, obviously it was. I mean, they were trying to avoid, you know, getting beat at the Nou Camp, you know, to try and make this game at Stamford Bridge either A, close, or B, you know, try not to just make it a formality, of course. But, you know, let's be honest. Let's think about this. It's very conservative tactics. Chelsea got on top early with the Essien goal, which was, God, I saw the replays for it, and it was absolutely phenomenal.
Yep.
I mean, the way he just whipped that ball into the goal, it was just brilliant.
Golazo.
Yeah, but think of it, it wasn't a goal that was set up, you know, in such a way that it was, you know, the ball was moved around back and forth and they found the open man. No, I mean, Essien rushed up to the ball and just whipped it in, and you know, and it happened to have enough pace, enough, you know, dip, enough of every other factor you want to call it, that it went in. Other than that, I mean, and the attempt by Drogba against Victor Valdez, nothing really. And you know what got me upset? And this is me speaking completely, you know, completely biased and neutral and whatever you want to call it. When Abidal gets sent off, It's ridiculous the way he gets sent off, fine. But to have a man advantage with that much time left in the game, the theory is when you make your substitutions, try and make them for attacking players.
Yep.
Instead, what Hiddink does, he takes out Drogba, brings in Belletti.
Right.
A defensive player, okay, fine. He has more attacking tendency. But try and bring in another forward.
Right.
You know, you substitute your forwards. You have a man advantage. Try and make your substitution. Try and be more offensive. Instead, Hiddink gets more defensive.
Right.
Or, I don't know, push up Essien. Do something else. I mean, do something else that's different. But
right.
Geez, I mean, he started getting more defensive with 25 minutes left in the game.
Well, exactly. And I think you make a great point there. You're up 1-0. You're up a man, and you're at home. That's the thing that people, you know, you're at home. That's your field. You got to attack. You got to go after the throat. You know, what's the best way to preserve a 1-0 win?
Make it a 2-0.
Exactly. You know, what's the best way to preserve a 2-0 win? Make it 3-0.
Exactly.
You know, exactly. And they didn't do that. They didn't do that. Chelsea fans can complain all they want and say, oh, you know, the referee cheated us, yada, 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 bullshit.
We was okay. Robbed. No, it's not flying. I mean, you still got to cash in on your opportunities. Fine, okay,
exactly.
you got two shots taken away.
Yep.
Two opportunities on goal that were taken away. Perfect. I can understand that. And were they penalties? Yeah, of course they were. But, you know, yep. I mean, that's not up to us, and it's not up to the players. It ends up being a referee's call, and the referee gave the bad call.
Right.
So what's a player supposed to do?
Yeah, you're right. You never leave it in the hands of the ref in any sport, regardless. It could be ping pong. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. You never leave it in the hands of the ref. And that's what, by Chelsea playing defensively and not attacking, you know, when they had all the advantages, they left it in the hands of the referee. And they wind up losing. I mean, it's pretty simple. You had a guy, Kalou is on the bench. You know, Kalou is a attacking player. You could have put him in and taken out a Bosingwa or somebody like that, a Maluda, anybody. But no, you got more defensive in that
cost. You could have kept Drogba in.
Right.
Fine. If you say, okay, look, Drogba looks a little bit tired. Okay, fine. Substitute him, but make it position for position. Don't start going defensive.
Right.
Especially when you have a man advantage. You usually try and do the opposite.
Right. And you're at home.
Exactly. On your ground. Exactly. Yeah. There's no doubt about it.
So, yeah. What's
going on there? Okay, fine. Okay, we was robbed. Fine, number one. Number two, the referee. Well, the referee, from what we've been doing, he's not a referee that has little or no experience. For those of you that are saying, he's from the Norwegian League. So what?
Yeah.
You know what?
What does that have to do with this?
That has nothing to do with it. You know why?
Exactly.
Because he's done Champions League games. He did referee Arsenal. He mm-hmm. refereed Barcelona Lyon, or he was in the refereeing crew with Barcelona Lyon. I mean, Atletico Marseille. I mean, what was the other matches that we were talking about, George?
Oh, you said, I think you said something about
Liverpool, Roma.
Liverpool, Roma. I can't remember what matches you had mentioned. You mentioned a bunch of them. He did a good number where
he's done a good number of important ones. It wasn't,
like his first ever.
Warsaw versus, you know, Grasshoppers.
Right, exactly.
Nothing like that. I mean, he's done quite a bit of them.
Right.
But, I mean, don't start, you know, giving him trouble over that.
Right. Usually, like in 99.9% of games, players lose the game. You know, the players are the ones that lose or win the games. Now, people might be listening and going, well, this is the 0.1%. No, it's not. Okay. This is not the 0.1%. Okay. And I would venture to say that Chelsea fans, if you look back on the tape and you're a little more critical of your team, you will see that Chelsea blew their opportunities. They blew their opportunities, and they didn't take advantage of the fact that Dani Alves played badly. Messi played badly. Eto'o disappeared.
Dani Alves had only one bright spot in the game, and that was that ball that he swung into the box that led to the goal. That was it.
Yeah.
That was mm-hmm. it. That was it.
Yep.
You know, and he's going to be missing the final. Oh, by the way, I brought up the matches that Henning Orobo has reffed in the past. I guess in the past year, because he hasn't done some hams. You know, he's done some real good games.
Right.
Inter versus Liverpool last season. Manchester versus Roma. This season he's done Standard Liège versus Liverpool. Okay, fine, we'll give you that one. But then he also played in the group stages factor with Atletico Madrid and Olympique Marseille. Yes, that was a controversial match. Mm-hmm. And he also did in the group stages, he did Celtic versus Manchester United in Glasgow. So it wasn't any, you know, hand-me-down games. He also did Barcelona versus Lyon.
Right.
The one where Barcelona beat Lyon 5-2. Then finally, Villarreal versus Arsenal in the quarterfinals. So, I mean, he's done some important matches. I mean, at the international level, he's also done other matches. But, you know, I mean, those are the ones, as far as Champions League are concerned, that we really need to worry about.
Right, right. You know, and it's... I wonder, we're talking about the referees and the tactics on the game, but also we got to focus on the Chelsea players and at the end of the game how they really lost their composure. They really did lose their composure toward the referee there. You know, the game is over. He's not going to put back 10 more minutes and get you back on the field to play. You know, getting in his face, arguing, yelling is not going to help the situation. You know, and I think if the players figure out, look at some tape. I know that Didier Drogba was like, look at the video, look at the video. First of all, let's say this about Didier Drogba. The man, I lost a lot of respect for him during this game. Mm-hmm. Because the whole damn game, if something didn't go his way, he would like throw a fit. Or he'd make a little like convulsion, you know, like 3-year-olds get upset and they kind of convulse their body or whatever.
Yeah.
And then he would turn around, lay on his back, put his hands over his face. And it happened like 3 or 4 times. And you're like, is this a grown-ass man who's supposed to be one of the top strikers in the world, or a damn 12-year-old who didn't get his way because, you know, after the referee missed the call or whatever? I mean, like, you got to be serious. You can't be playing like that and completely lose your composure in a Champions League semifinal here, you know? So I think Didier Drogba, I lost a lot of respect for him after this game. And you know how I'm always saying Gus Hiddink is a master tactician and all of that? I think his tactics took a hit. I mean, I know on the national team level he's pretty untouchable, but when it comes to this Chelsea manager and what he's accomplished, it took a big hit today, his tactics, because he really put Chelsea in a bad spot by the formations and the substitutions and the attitude of the team.
Well, I mean, the attitude doesn't depend on him. I mean, the players are full-grown men. They're professionals. I mean, you know, the attitude, you know, it's like those that say, well, the coach has got to be a motivator. You know what? If, let's say, Pep Guardiola, let's for example, or even a Gus Hiddink or an Alex Ferguson, has a player that's not motivated at this phase of the season, then he's not a professional.
Yeah, yeah. I
mean, if you're not motivated to play a Champions League semifinal with a chance to go into the Champions League final, then, you know, there's nothing that's going to motivate you.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's very true. I'm very disappointed in Drogba, you know, because the way he acted. I mean, he came out after and like in his flip-flops, and we were talking about that. He came out in his flip-flops to argue with the referee some more. And you're like, come on, dude, it's over. You know, I know it's hard to get over. I mean, you know, to lose like that is very tough, but you got to deal with it, man. You're a man, you know, you can't be doing stuff like that. I was surprised that the referee didn't give him a red card. The referee only showed him a yellow. I thought for sure he was going to get a red the way he was going. I mean, they had to get security, had to surround the referee. I'm like, it was just ridiculous. It was ridiculous. Chelsea is a bad day for Chelsea in terms of on the pitch, and then some of the behavior of the players was
put it on yourself. I mean, as far as that's concerned, going saying it once again, as a team, if you have a team down, the only way you're going to beat them is either putting your foot on their throat or breaking their neck.
Right.
That's the only way you're going to do it. If you give them a chance, just the slightest little opening to a team like Barcelona, they're going to do it.
Yeah.
I think Barca had 1 or 2 shots on goal, and there you go.
Yeah. And what kind of bothered me too, and maybe this is me ranting on about English bias or whatever. After the game, I switched it back on. I put it on. I went back to ESPN2. Listen to what they had to say. And they're talking about Chelsea dominated the game and dominate. I'm like, did they change the definition? When does dominating mean you take 3 shots and your opponent takes 2? You know, when does dominating mean that you had, you know, less than 40% possession and your opponent has 60? I was like, they
you
dominated.
You know what's the saddest part about that 60% possession? Barca, I think they were saying at one point that they had like 70% possession when they were a man down.
Yeah.
Something like
that's
that.
That's even
70,
worse.
70%, 70, 75% possession when they had the ball, when they were a man right. down. I was like,
right.
what? You know, usually when you say, oh my God, the team's a man down, you literally, on that field, you did not feel for those last 20 plus minutes that Barca had a man less.
Right.
You know, and Chelsea never put that into effect because, again, the substitution pattern. Why is Belletti coming in for Drogba? God, what were the other substitutions? I forgot off the top of my head.
Let me see here. I'll let you know. Mm-hmm. Because you had Belletti came in
for Drogba. That was the
for
one.
For Drogba. I think that was the only one. That was the only substitution.
Oh, because Boyan came in for. Bojan came in. I forgot who. I don't have that info in front of me right now. But Bojan came in for somebody.
Right.
For Sergi Busquets, who was an absolute disaster.
Disaster, yeah.
He was just lost. I mean, the game was bigger than him tonight. I mean, it was just a much bigger game for him.
Yeah, I mean, he probably touched the ball once, if he did at all.
But it wasn't only just that. It was the simple fact that he was so. The game was just, I don't know, it seemed to be like bigger than him, at least for tonight. I mean, he's still, what, 18, 19 years old, so let's not start, you know, talking about Sergi Busquets as a full-fledged veteran. You know,
right.
He's not. He's still a young guy that's learning how to play the game. But.
And he was kind of forced into action because of the Henry injury and Iniesta having to move up front. Mm-hmm. So he kind of was forced into action there, but. Nevertheless, it wound up not hurting the team because they're going to the final. So
here it goes. 66th minute, Abidal gets sent off.
Right.
In the 72nd minute,
Belletti comes in for Drogba.
Yeah, you know, Hiddink comes in and says, okay, fine, we got to take Drogba out in for Belletti. Like, you know, it's a defensive player, you know?
Right.
Why?
When you have a Kalou on the bench, you have a Di Santo on the bench. Mm-hmm. Put a Kalou in there, you take out, you know, you could probably play three in the back. Especially if you're a man up, you're dominating the position and you find a way to get possession. It's hard to get possession on Barcelona, but if you're more aggressive because you have a man up, you have an Essien who's a tackling machine, you know, who can win the ball, you know, take out a defender and put in a Kalou and go for that second goal, you know, so. He definitely made some questionable decisions.
Another thing here was, oh, they gave too much extra time. I'm like, well, they gave 4 minutes, but Barcelona scored in the 93rd.
Right.
You know,
right.
If somebody should have taken advantage of it was Chelsea. But here's the problem. Once a team that's been defensive for so long in the game and in the series decides to go offensive,
it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
Right.
You know, but a guy. Oh my God! But if your guy to criticize is Drogba, my guy to criticize is Balak.
Yep,
Balak was absolute garbage. I mean, he couldn't recover a ball. He couldn't outrun anybody. The goal. I mean, the goal itself. When Iniesta takes a shot on goal, what does Balak do? He ducks.
Yep, that's right.
I mean, dude, take one in the mouth for your team.
Team, yeah, for real.
Fine, you know, you're going to get popped in the mouth real good. Maybe, yeah, you'll feel a little bit of a headache, but, yo, you're going to the Champions League final.
And he's got more than enough money to take care of whatever dental damage happens, you know?
Yeah.
Well, we haven't been real big fans of Michael Ballack anyway, so
that's not good for us. The Michael Ballack in Chelsea has not been a guy that...
Yeah, right.
I would have never, you know, when Michael Ballack was at his peak powers, I would have never imagined Michael Ballack playing as a double, at the double six or the double five, as Argentines like to call it, you know, a double defensive midfielder with Michael Essien. I just never saw that. You know?
Yeah. The Michael Ballack from those days in Germany, what was it, Bayern Leverkusen he used to play?
Bayern Munich, yeah.
That was the good days. Those were the Ballack that... Everybody thought was going to tear the world up, but he definitely has been stifled since he's gone to Chelsea.
Yeah.
So,
you know.
But hey, the German game is a lot more offensive than the English game.
Well, so, I think yeah, being fair to the Premiership, I mean it's a more balanced game too.
Right. Yeah.
But I mean to see Michael Ballack and the way he's just, I mean, he was part of the reason why Barcelona is going to Rome and he's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
But let's step away, you know, from bashing, or I don't know if it's called bashing, but criticizing what Chelsea's done. But we also got to look at what Barcelona's doing. I mean, Josep Guardiola sat that back after the game. He's like, okay, we're at one of the finals. Okay, now what?
Now what?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that was the first thing. Yeah, which was great hearing them in the post game interviews. Well, you know, our focus is now playing Villarreal and trying to win the title. And then, you know, after we play Villarreal, our focus is to win the Copa del Rey and this other thing. But he also mentioned that, you know, he kind of was worried about what's going to happen, you know, when he goes to Rome on May 27th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got some issues. I mean, you mentioned it.
He's got some big issues.
Big issues. No Abidal, no Alves. Henry will be back, but you never know with these kind of injuries. And Henry does have a history of injury from going back to his days of Arsenal. So, you know, he's got some major concerns, you know. And with a team that's well-organized like Manchester United that can, you know, with Ronaldo and Tevez and Rooney. I mean, we're not huge fans of Rooney, but Rooney's still a good player.
Yeah.
You know.
But yeah, he's a can very exploit good player. That. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, they can exploit those wings, and then...
And they can also, with Berbatov, you know, and a guy, and I was kind of bashing you for it at first, but I really got to think about it, and I think Ryan Giggs, he's still got quite a bit in his tank, and he should have a chance to play, and if he does, he's going to cause some damage.
If I was Sir Alex Ferguson, I would lean on Ryan Giggs to do everything. Like, in any big game, Ryan Giggs would be in the starting 11. Without a question. I wouldn't even think twice about it. Because I think he's like the most underrated, like great player that's in Europe right now.
I really think of our generation.
Our generation. Yeah.
You know, if you want to talk about players that haven't gone to a World Cup, he's probably in your top three.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We put him alongside the George Bests.
And the George Weah.
George Weah, yep. You put him around
those
there.
Three. I mean, he's in that category as far as players who never went and never will go to a World Cup.
Right.
But Barcelona's going to face a defense that, like, they've never faced before against Manchester. I mean, to have a central duo like Rio Ferdinand and Nemanja Vidic is just, you know, that's an awesome task unto itself.
Right.
I mean, we were talking about, you know, Chelsea being a good task, but it was going to be tough for, you know, the central pairing, you know, Terry and Alex having to be able to keep up with that dough and having to be able to keep up with Messi and doing this, you know, let's be honest, you know, Bosingua is not Patrice Evra.
Right.
The Chelsea back line is nothing like, you know, like Manchester. And that defensive line, that defensive back line of those four, it's nothing that Barca has seen so far this year.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be the best back line they've seen all year.
Yes.
No doubt. Yes. By far.
By far.
Nothing they have. There's nothing in La Liga that even comes close. Nothing.
No.
So, not even their own. So.
No.
It's going to be a challenge, definitely.
And midfield, I guess they could, if you put them at equal strength, they could probably end up neutralizing each other.
Yeah. But I'd give the slight advantage to Barcelona. You know, I'd give the slight advantage because
it'll be enough. To Manchester still can go out there and neutralize them.
Right.
I mean, right. On paper, I'm talking about. And up front, right. I mean, you know, both of them are just incredible. You know.
Right.
I mean, no, yeah. But
up front. I mean, there's no doubt that Barca has the advantage that way. Mm-hmm. But the Manchester United trio, if it's a trio, if they put Tevez, Rooney, or Rooney, Berbatov, and Ronaldo,
yeah,
it's still pretty good.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, it's not like, you know, they're not, you know, they're still pretty good. They might not be up there with Eto'o, Messi, and Henry, but if I have those three starting up front, I'm going to feel good about my team. I'm going to feel good about my chances. So it's... Manchester United in the three aspects, you know, the back line, midfield, and Barcelona are as close to Barcelona as any team. And in many cases, like you said, they're as better. So
yeah, I think so too. And to see that going on, I would pick Manchester. I mean, obviously, you still got a couple weeks to go. Right now, I would pick Manchester to win it.
Yeah, I mean, as a Barca fan, I want Barca to win. I'm going to be cheering for Barca. But looking at the experience, looking at, you know,
there's
semifinal.
There's too many holes that Guardiola has to fix, has to fill.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, automatically when you say, okay, well, but at least our central defenders are going to be there. Yeah, but fine, you have a Silvinho on the left. Who do you put on the right?
Yeah.
OK, okay, fine. If that's the case, all right, then, well, we got to bring in Cáceres. And then Puyol goes out on the left, and then we have Silvino on the right. Oh, snap, I have two wingers that are left-footed. Ooh, that's a problem. That's going to be a problem. That type of thing, you know, those types of issues are going to start, you know, swirling. So, I mean...
Right. But even if, let's say, but even if they had full strength, you know, even if Alves on the right, Abidal on the left, Puyol in the middle, who usually in these big game situations, does Marquez would go in the middle.
Yeah, he that's would usually be, yes, the no doubt, yeah.
That's still pretty vulnerable. You know, that's, I mean, it's not, it's good, but it's not rock solid. That's still something.
When you have Rooney and Ronaldo coming at you at full speed and you know, you have Rafa Marquez and Puyol trying to keep up with him.
Yeah.
Your chances don't look too good.
Good, exactly. So that's the key right there. Sir Alex Ferguson is going to have to find a well, he's a master at it. He's a master at finding a way to get at the weakness of a team and then exploiting it. So Barcelona, like you said, there's a lot of holes to fill. And if Guardiola pulls this off with a makeshift back line, he should just retire. Because he really won't be able to do anything greater than that, you know, for Barcelona.
Yeah.
But at least, but you know what? We got the final that everybody wanted to see. This is the final that everybody wants to see. Barcelona and Manchester United. So we got it.
The storylines are going to be abundant, you know.
Right.
Piqué playing his old team. You know, Messi versus Ronaldo.
Yep.
You know, Henri going to face his old nemesis once again, if he's healthy enough.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of this. You know, the whole, you know, England versus Spain, England versus Europe, England versus UEFA, about, you know, Barcelona trying to get the first ever treble in Spanish history.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of things on the line for this game.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's going to be huge.
You got the old coach, the old veteran in Ferguson against the new guy, Guardiola. Yeah, so lots of stuff. The only regret is they're showing it on a Wednesday. I wish they would put it on the weekend. Is it next year that they're going to do
next
the game?
Next year they're going to start doing it on the weekends.
And they should have tried to do it earlier.
Know, one thing that's going to be attractive, we talk about that after the break, is how ESPN might be throwing everything out the window and just, you know, go all out for this one because it's their last, Champions League telecast. Let's see what's going to happen with that one, you know? All right, so
very interesting.
Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back, okay?
All right.
We'll be right back.